Okay, welcome to the first of hopefully many Halacha from Gemara Shirin. Now, this is very different from our Tuesday class. We have a few here from our Tuesday afternoon class, which we had yesterday. The Tuesday afternoon class is nice. It's basically what I call a deconstructed drasha, which is where we talk about the parsha, we go through different sources that maybe I would say in shorthand if I was giving a sermon, and then we come out with a nice lesson, we come out with a nice message at the end of the day. That is not what this shir is, right? This was clearly designed to be more intensive, more in the text, and more analytical. So forgive me if you don't have any warm fuzzies at the end of each class, because this is meant to really elicit discussion and to give you a taste of what it means to learn in depth different concepts and different technical rules. So the question became, how technical do we want to get? And the truth is that when we're learning the real Gemara, so it's always going to be technical to some extent. The question, however, was, do we want it to be relatable? Do we want it to be something which is sort of very academic? So I think I found something in the middle, which is that it's something where it affects interpersonal relationships. It affects how we relate to other people, more specifically. But it's not fluffy in that we're not going to be talking about how to be nice to each other and how to not hurt each other's feelings. We're going to be talking about law, halacha. How do we dictate what exactly, or how do we discern what dictates the interactions that we have? So I thought one way that we could start it off, and the truth is I was looking into V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, and I have a nice shir on that, and it's a very good shtickle if I say so myself, but it's not really in the Gemara. V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha is something which oftentimes runs in the background of a lot of Gemaras. No. It's running in the background to sort of dictate different leniencies we have for different welcome for different situations. But it's not really, there's no Gemara that says, how do you define V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, so much so that there are Rishonim that debate what exactly is V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. So I didn't want to go down that road because there's not much in terms of the Gemara, in terms of the background that you might have in a typical mainstream halacha context. So what I decided on, and by the way, this is a little flexible. We can change it up if we don't like this topic, we don't like this Gemara. We can always change it. We can always find something that's more palatable for everyone. Another option I was thinking about is finding something that's relevant to the Daf Yomi cycle, because I'm already learning that and I have a good handle on different topics that are within that. But we can really do anything. So today I picked out a topic which maybe you'll find interesting, because it, on the one hand, refers to personal ownership of property, and it also refers to how to understand the different aspects that go into ownership in general. So what we're talking about here, and you'll find here in your page here, is a Gemara called Bava Metzia. Bava Metzia is literally translated as the middle gate. There are three gates. There's Bava Kama, which is the first gate. Bava Metzia is the middle gate. And then there's Bava Basra, which is the last gate. Very original and very unique, specified tractates. What exactly does it mean? So it's really a catch-all for interpersonal relationships. Bava Kama has a lot to do with damages. Bava Metzia has a lot to do with halachas dictating civil law. And Bava Basra has a lot to do with property management. So, and obviously, they're big mesechtas. They're big ones. Bava Basra is the biggest mesechta. This is Bava Metzia, which I think goes up to about 120, which is 240 in American pages. In Bava Basra, it goes up to 176 or 167. 176? Yeah, I get them confused. Yeah. Same as Tehillim Kofiotes, yeah. So it has to be an even number, 176, because Kofiotes is all the letters in the alphabet eight times over. That was actually in yesterday's daf. Either way, and it's the same number as Bava Basra, obviously, which is why I'm talking about it. But the Gemara here in Bava Metzia is talking about what we all know to be the phrase, which is Hashavas Aveda. Hashavat Aveda. What does Hashavat Aveda mean? Returning a lost object. So this is what we're going to be trying to focus on. Hashavas Aveda is an interesting topic because we have different sources within Bava Metzia that sort of tell us there are a lot of different factors, okay? And I'm going to try to break it down in a way that's more digestible for everyone. There are a lot of different factors, and I have to brush on them. I have to brush up on them myself. This is a Gemara from 10 years ago, and you can see I've got tons of notes in it. It was when I was doing it for Daf Yomi, actually. So you can, two cycles ago of Bava Metzia, you could probably find the time when I was learning it. But what's interesting about Hashavas Aveda is you have on the one hand an item which belongs to someone, but also in some ways doesn't belong to someone. And then when someone picks it up, it also somehow belongs to them. Right, you're sort of sharing ownership in a weird, strange dynamic. Right? If someone loses, let's say, a purse, and you find it. So on the one hand, that belongs to the person who lost it, but it's not really in their hand. It's not in their property. They might not even know about it. It might be something that they gave up on. It might have been there for years. It might have been there for a day. They might have just put it down 5 seconds ago. So all of these different elements factor into how do we look at a lost item. Does it still belong to the previous owner? Does it now belong to the one who picks it up? Let's say we assume it doesn't belong to the previous owner. To what extent does it belong to the person that picked it up? And based on that, based on how much it actually belongs to the previous owner or to the new person who picks it up, that will dictate to us what are the requirements of giving it back. What are the requirements of telling people about what are the indicators of who it belongs to? To what extent do they have to prove that it belongs to them in order for them to gain it back? So there are a lot of different dynamics that come in play here. Besides that, what I really want to focus on, and I don't know if we'll get there tonight, is really the other side of the page. So the first side of the page, which you'll find the top has a 58 on it. That's the first side of the page. And the second side of the page is really the next daf. It's really the next page in the Gemara, which has a lamed on the top of it. So I want to get to that. There's a certain subject there that I want to get to, and that is that there are some times that things override Hashavas Aveda, meaning that Hashavas Aveda, while in a vacuum, it's an obligation. We have to return a lost object. But there are other considerations that might be more important than Hashavas Aveda that will negate our relationship to the obligation. Okay, so that I'm saying that in very general terms because I don't want to talk about it too in depth before we get to it. But as we go, we'll see how there's a lot at play in the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. So, for instance, some questions that we might have to deal with is, what am I allowed to do with a lost item? Let's say the lost item is a book. Am I allowed to read the book? How about this question? When does the obligation to return an item kick in? Let's say I see the purse from 5 feet away. Am I now obligated to pick it up and give it back to the person? Let's say I'm 50 feet away, 100 feet away. Let's say someone else told me there's a purse there. When does the obligation really kick in? And let's say now I picked it up. Let's say I never give it back. I just picked it up. Have I violated anything by not giving it back? What if I never picked it up? Did I violate anything? Or did I just lose out on the opportunity to get a mitzvah? Right, so this is how we have to categorize different things in the Gemara, and we'll go through them little by little as we move forward. And with that introduction, let's jump in.
Objects, does animals count as objects?
Animals would count, yeah.
So you have to feed them for dinner.
Right, so that's another interesting question. To what extent am I obligated in protecting or ensuring its safety? Right. Let's say I picked up the purse, and then a thief came and stole it. Is that on me? Or is it like, well, I could have not picked it up in the first place? Yeah. Right? So these are different dynamics that could come into play also.
It's not like you wanted the thief to steal it?
No. But the question is it your fault?
How responsible are you?
Right. Do you become the protector? That's true, unless you were negligent in how you took care of it. Right, if you didn't bring it into your house, you put it on the stoop, you put it on the porch, and then the thief comes and steals it, we're not going to say, oh, it's okay, because you're the victim, right? No, because you should have been more protective of that item, right? So these are the types of things that we'll have to deal with, and that comes back to the question: to what extent are you also an owner in the item that you picked up, even if it's not yours? do you still have some stake in maintaining its maintaining its protection?
Would a lost person, like a child, fit into something like this? Really a child, someone who's...
Yeah, I would assume so. I'm not familiar with any Gemaras about it, though. I don't know. I know. I think the pasuk even talks about an animal, but I'm not sure about a person. The pasuk in Aseres Hadibros, Lo Signov, is referring to a person that's kidnapping. But I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not familiar.
Was the kid considered
property? Right, that's part of the question. Is it really an item?
A child would be considered lost, and a child isn't really competent enough
to take
care of himself, so he would almost fit into a property.
He wouldn't have his own autonomy.
Right.
Just like an item doesn't have his own autonomy. I don't know if we wouldn't, Chas v'Shalom in English, call it a thing, but in all intents and purposes, you, in terms of how you relate to that child, it's how you relate to something that's your property.
It's not an independent being.
Right, exactly.
Care for it and watch out for it and protect it. So.
Okay. So does anyone know how the Gemara works? How the page is broken down? So you'll see the main area is the middle. On the front page here, you don't really see that it's the middle. It's the most of the page. This is the Gemara. This Gemara is compiled by Ravina and Ravashi. It's a commentary in some ways, or an elucidation of the Mishnah. So if you look about, I don't know, 10 lines down, you might see these bigger letters. Mem, Tav, Nun, and Yud. We're on the 58. On 58. 58, also known in Gemara terminology as Chaf Tes Amud Beis, or 29b. So in the middle here, really in the second wide line, you'll see these bigger letters, Mem, Tav, Nun, Yud. Does anyone know what that stands for?
Masnissen, this is the Mishnah, right?
Masnissen. What does Masnissen translate as? It's Aramaic. Okay, well, Mishnah is a derivative of the word Lishanot, like Vishinantam Levanecha. So it's really our Mishnah, Masnissen. Our Mishnah, the one that we're dealing with now, is the following. Okay, here's the first line. Matzah Svarim. You found books. Okay? They don't belong to you, but now you found them. Now, Sfarim typically is a reference to Jewish books. You didn't find Moby Dick. You found like a Chumash. Okay? Matzah Sfarim might even be a Sefer Torah. Not really sure. Sometimes the Gemara uses the word Sefer to mean Sefer Torah. Matzah Sfarim kore bahen echad l'shloshim yom. So, just, I'm going to translate the words literally, and then you can tell me what you think it means. He found books.
Or someone found books.
Someone found books. Matzah just means... It could be anyone. It could be matzah, or it could be matzah. Literally, it translates to he, because it doesn't have a hey at the end. Matzah svarim. Kore bahen echad l'shloshim yom. One can read them once every 30 days. Now, what is that trying to say? You found books. I shouldn't even say the word can, because that implies something too. One reads them once every 30 days. Echad l'shloshim yom. Now, there are two ways to understand that. Who wants to try to figure it out?
This book is read generally once every 30 days.
Okay.
You can or you may read this book once every 30 days.
Okay, so what are you trying to say?
That you're not so swift to return it at this point.
Okay.
So one
interesting implication is it doesn't say give it back right away.
Yeah.
It almost assumes that you're going to have it for a while. Now the question is, when we say Echad L'Shloshim Yom, does it mean one can read it once every 30 days, or one should read it once every 30 days?
Didn't they not have a printing press in those days? Like, how do people lose books? Books must have been so rare.
Yes, it is interesting that they lost the book. But let's assume for a moment, for the sake of the Mishnah, that they did lose it. They were at shul, their kids were driving them crazy, they ran out of shul, and they left their sefer right in the middle of shul. I don't know. you can concoct your own play, your own, you know, your own scene. But you found books. Now the question is it telling us you have to read it once every 30 days? Or if you want to read it, you can only read it once every 30 days? It's not very clear from the Mishnah.
Wouldn't it be a different tense? Wouldn't it be kara instead of...
No, it would be kore either way. Mm-hmm. Kore in the present tense. The Mishnah is always going to talk in the present tense.
Okay. Maybe the person who found it is supposed to not just put it away and forget about it, but at least...
Use it.
Bring it back to the...
Good. So Aviva is saying that it doesn't mean one is allowed to read it once every 30 days. It means one has to read it once every 30 days. That's what Aviva is saying. You're not supposed to just pick it up, put it on your shelf, put out a calling post, hey, I found this book, anyone want to come get it? No, you have to take care of the book. I mean, this is one of the questions that we introduced with, which is, when you find something, what is your responsibility towards that item? So the very first mishnah that we're going to see, there are other mishnahs about that we could talk about, but the very first mishnah that we see here is that you have a responsibility towards that book. You're not just, you know, if you do it, great, if you don't do it, okay. This is a responsibility. When you find a lost item, you're taking a certain semblance of ownership and a certain semblance of accountability. If someone comes by and finally sees your book, sees their book, and say, I've been waiting to find this book. You know, through my years, I've lost a bunch of books that have been part of sets. And, you know, the dream is that you're going to find that second book. I have a book. This is a great story. I don't know, great story. Terrible story for me. But there's a book from Rav Kook, which is a commentary on the Siddur, called Olat Re'iyah. The Olat Re'iyah is two volumes, typically. And when I moved to Kansas, well, actually when I moved to New York, I only had the second volume. And as people might know, Mincha Ma'ariv, I have a knack for learning about davening with people. Right, that's what I teach during Mincha Ma'ariv. I teach davening, and I always wished I had Rav Kook's Sefer that I could teach, but I only had the second volume. The second volume is all the holidays and all the unique davening that we have. But I needed the first volume, so I didn't know where it was. So I go for years without this first volume, and my brother and I have this. We had this minhag. When I lived in Kansas and he was in Denver, we would switch off going to each other's house. About eight-hour drive, one of the most boring drives you could possibly have. And it's very flat. There are no turns. I don't know if anyone knows I-70, but it's literally a straight line.
Home in Nebraska. Yeah, alfalfa.
Yeah, it does not turn. Just one straight line the whole way. Once you get into Colorado, at least it goes up and down. But literally, no turns. So I'm at his house. I went 1 year. Then he came to me 1 year, and then I went back to his house the third year. I'm looking at his books, and lo and behold, he has the Olat Re'iyah Volume 1. I said, where did you get that from? He said, I don't know where I got it from. It was part of my books. I pick it up off the shelf. I open the front cover, and there is my name and phone number. I said, this is my book. You've had my book for, I don't know, 10 years. I've been waiting. I've been looking for this book. So now the question is, let's say I opened that book and it had a water damage. Is my brother responsible to pay for that book? It was a lost book. I was continually looking for it. I had never given up hope that I was going to find it. I thought maybe at my parents' house. I didn't know it was going to be at my twin brother's house in Denver. But that's where I found it. Let's say I opened it up and there was water damage. He was the owner of my book, in some way, in some capacity, he was the owner of my book.
So maybe I could ask him. When did the water damage occur?
Was it within it? Yeah. When was the last time you used this book? Oh, I've never used that book before.
Well, then there
seems to be a responsibility on his part to take care of it. Echad mishloshim yom. Once every 30 days.
Unless you cause water damage, but you just don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just giving an example. It could be anything in terms of his responsibility.
Does he get ownership of it? Can it be owned by both of them?
Oh, so it's not really... He's not the real owner. he's in some ways a quasi-owner in that he has accountability, so right? He has to take care of it.
An article in the paper a week ago about Mark Twain's first part of the manuscript of Huckleberry Finn. So apparently the second part of the manuscript he had given to a very good friend of his, but no one knew where the first part was. 200 years later, somebody looks in there and suddenly there it is, and they realize he had meant to send it to this very good friend and it never got there, and he died afterwards. So the question was, who owned it?
Oh, okay. This, well, that's a question of real ownership.
Right.
Well,
right. But it's the same.
Make a difference also? I mean, it's obviously yours.
Yeah, well, that would make it would make a difference if it wasn't there and he claimed it was his. Right, the fact that it had my name was a clear indicator that it was mine.
Right.
Always put your name in books.
Yeah.
No, so that I see that. I think the point of looking at it every 30 days is to remind yourself.
Okay.
Is to remind you that it's not yours, really.
Or on the flip side, aren't you worried about if you take it out every 30 days and maybe read it or do something with it, it does get damaged.
Right, maybe you're going to be the one that damages it.
You're going to be the one to damage.
Okay, so
maybe
let's...
It would be better sitting on the shelf.
Right, so for this type of thing... We need somebody to help us. Who's going to help us? Rashi. Rashi, Rav Shlomo Yitzchaki, from the 11th century in France. He did most of his learning in Germany. I think we talked about him in Legends and Lessons. We never talked about Rashi? Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, so we probably talked about Rashi when we talked about Rabbeinu Tam. But if you look at the second line down in Rashi, Rashi is always on which side of the page?
Inside.
You can't tell when it's a photocopy. But he's on the inside of the page. So this is the back of the page. So here Rashi says, Achas l'shloshim yom, shemit ap shin. What does ap shin mean? Mit ap shin. I think I know what it means. I'm not 100% sure. Ipush, I think, means dust. Mit apshin. Mit apshin kisheshoin milifot chan. When you show him means when you wait to open it. Right? If you leave a book on a shelf for a long time, it'll collect dust.
Right. Okay.
And that damages in some ways the book. V'chol svarim shalhen hayu asuyin bigilyon. And all of their books were made with a gilyon. What is gilyon? A scroll. Gilyon, like galila. Like you wrap it up. Gilyon could also mean like a margin, but in this case it means the actual scroll. Let's look at this bet for a second. Just make sure. Okay. That one goes to the Bach on the side to the left. I just can't read it very well. It usually is just a typo or a... Let me see if I can read it in a very small one here. It just means made in a scroll. I mean, he has a different girsa of Rashi. He has a different text that had a different wording. So he wants to make sure that... Yeah, it's not like a book like we have. It's a book like a scroll. Now, whether or not that actually means a Sefer Torah, probably not, right? Because that's what he's saying here.
It's like the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yeah.
The books are scrolls.
Well, was that a real Sefer Torah, the Dead Sea Scrolls?
No, but the Dead Sea Scrolls has a lot of different forms. It's not just the Torah.
Right.
There's like tons of things, but everything's a scroll because they're all scrolls.
Right, but aren't they Tanakh? Is there anything that's not Tanakh there?
They have some things that are not in Tanakh.
Okay.
That are like those,
so then, yeah, you're right.
Those Sfarim that were like the almost got in Tanakh.
Yeah, there. I gotcha. Yeah, yeah, Ben Sira.
And then they also had some books about like how you should act.
Uh-huh.
That they wrote themselves.
Okay. Yeah, so that's how they used to write books. That used to be how they wrote books. So, So says Rashi, why does, according to Rashi, what does Rashi think this Mishnah is telling us?
Take it out and dust it.
Right.
That the purpose of taking out once every 30 days is because you're responsible to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not just, if you want to, you can only do it for once every 30 days. What it means instead is, you have to take it out once every 30 days. So already we see that there's a responsibility from somebody when they find something. Okay? Why is that responsibility? Because you don't want to damage the book from it sitting idly. Now let's continue with the next part of the Mishnah. Let's say, and this might sound a little strange to us. V'im enu yode alikros golulan. What if you don't know how to read? You still have to roll it. Now, interestingly enough, if I were to ask you, why does a person have to roll it?
To keep it fresh.
Presumably, you don't need another reason, right? You could use the same reason as before. The reason a person has to read it once every 30 days is the same reason why someone who can't read it would have to roll it every 30 days. And yet, if you look at Rashi, for some reason, feels the need to tell us a completely different reason. And this is also, I don't know if you can see it so well. Golilan means that you have to roll it. What does it say? Mitzchilasan lesofan. From the beginning to the end. Now, why is that interesting? In regards to what we just said.
Because if you were reading,
you don't have to read it the whole thing. When he said you have to read it once every 30 days, how much do you have to read? Presumably just a little bit. Take it off the shelf, make sure it's not collecting dust, and then read a little bit, close it up, put it back on the shelf. And yet here, he says you have to open it from the beginning, you have to roll it to the end. Why? Sheikanes behen ha'avir. What does that mean? You have to air it out. You have to expose it. Make sure that it's not sitting idly and maybe decaying. It might be, maybe you'll catch something that fell onto it and it'll cause like a smudge. You have to make sure you roll it out, make sure the air gets to it, and it oxidizes, right? Make sure it maintains its quality.
So that's what Rashi said at the beginning, to dust it.
Yes, right. But there are elements within the second Rashi that aren't in the first one, and there are some in the first one that aren't in the second one. Right? The first one said you have to read it. Here we're not talking about reading it. The second one said you have to do it from the beginning to the end. The first one didn't say anything about the beginning of the end. The first one said you never have to roll it at all. Right? So Rashi is giving us two entirely different concerns that would apply differently just because a person doesn't know how to read. That's the only difference. And therefore he has to take care of it in a different way. If you were a rabbi, why would you consider that a legitimate reason or justification for the difference of the two clauses? Why is that meaning? Why is the fact that a person can't read, why does that necessitate a lot more labor?
Because you would think, I can't read, why should I even bother? I mean, why would I even take it down to, you
right,
know,
good,
couldn't do it.
And furthermore, and this might come back to something someone said before. Maybe it was Bacha, I don't remember. If you have a book in the times of the Mishnah that wasn't just something you keep on your shelf. Nowadays, we have an embarrassment of riches. We have tons of books that can be made on such a cheap level that we can afford to just keep them on our bookcase and let them sit there. Back then, if you had a book, you know what that meant? It meant days, weeks, years of preparation to make that book. People didn't have a lot of books. If you had a book, you would read it all the time, if you could read. So when we talk about the first clause in Rashi, or really the first clause in the Mishnah, what we're saying is, if someone has a book, they have to read it once in 30 days. At least once in 30 days. If you're busy and you can't get to it, you have to make sure to read it once in 30 days. But most people, if you had a book, you're going to read it. And therefore, you're not going to stay on the same page the whole time. You're not going to stay in the same column. You're naturally going to roll through it. When it says likros, it doesn't mean open it up, say the same thing every 30 days, and then close it up. It means you have to go through it. And therefore, just naturally, you'll make your way through the book. But if you're someone who has no ability to read, you're going to neglect it by nature. You're never going to think about it. you're literally going to let it sit on your shelf and do nothing because you have nothing else to do with it.
If they're that rare, what is he doing with it?
He found it.
He can't read.
He found it.
So
yeah.
Reading know, is really another way of saying you have to value so it. You have to.
If it's so rare, how did he get it?
How did he get it?
Yeah, that's what Bhatia was asking before. Somehow he got it.
A huge effort to return it to the person because it's something very valuable.
Right, yeah. Sometimes it's hard to find the owner.
Is it really about reading and valuing it, or it's just about...
protecting it.
Just checking it out to make, you know... I don't know. I don't really know so much about scrolls. Like, we just had our mezuzahs.
About cleaning.
No, we just had our mezuzahs checked. Mm-hmm. So mezuzahs are, like, the only things that I know of that are maybe like those scrolls. But I don't know. It's like our mezuzahs... We are very shocked because we... And Bira Sisayas, this is, like, the first time we checked our mezuzahs in, like, 30 years. But for some reason, they were still perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So... Maybe they don't degrade so fast, but maybe in this country where there was like sandstorms or whatever, there was degrading.
Yeah, there wasn't the same temperature control inside of houses, and there wasn't the same kind of wrapping that you might have wrapped your mezuzah in.
So they're just you gotta check them once a month to see if there's a problem, and if there's a problem, what do? You take it to the sofa and they have to fix it.
That's a good question. What would happen if you found dust on it? What would happen if there's a mistake in it? I'm not sure. We'll have to keep reading and see if there's something to tell you.
Do we have any indication of how long you do this for?
That's a good question. How long do you have to wait? I'm not sure.
But if the person can't read, how would they know that there was an error?
Right. Well, that would where we talk about the person that can read.
It's just saying that there has to be some kind of use of it, value of it.
Really more protection of it.
Like we took our mezuzahs to the sofa to get checked because, I guess that indicates that we can't tell on our own if there's a problem with it. What are they looking for? Are they looking for like a cockroach, or are they looking for like a letter got smudged? Like what are they looking for? We don't know.
Doesn't say that they have to look for anything. They just have to make sure that it's used and not laid to waste or to rot. Something when things sit by themselves. They just get old. It just naturally happens. So you have to put it to use to make sure you oxidize it, like Rashi said. Yeah, give it, let
so
it air
get,
out.
Like, musty.
Yeah, stuff like that. Okay, but comes an interesting caveat. The end of that line, the next part. Aval lo yilmod behen betchila. What does that mean? You're not supposed to learn from it at the beginning. What does that mean? You're not supposed to learn from it at the beginning.
First, find it.
Okay, why would that be?
Maybe the owner will come right away. Don't want to change it.
Maybe you'll become so interested in it, you might not want to return it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Kind of
interesting. So Rashi this time is a little more cryptic. Rashi doesn't exactly tell us the full reason. Ma shelo lamad mipnei. The reason you're not going to learn from it is because you have to let it sit in front of you. Doesn't really explain why. It sounds as if I had to guess, that this is a general rule by Hashavas Aveda, that you have to give a person an opportunity to find it. Right? Before you start using it and making use of it yourself, and allowing things to potentially happen while you're using it, you have to allow the person to get it back in the condition that they lost it in. That might be what he's talking about. I'm not really sure. I'm not going to pretend like I know, but that's what Rashi says. And it's sort of as an extension of that, but in an easy extension of that, the Mishnah then says, "V'lo yikare acher imo," and another person shouldn't read it with him. Interesting statement. It doesn't say v'lo yikare acher. It says v'lo yikare acher imo. Why? What is that extra word imo doing there?
That makes it more like this is mine. Come over and read with me, kind of thing. Like
That it's mine to share.
Right.
That's the implication. Is that this is really mine? I can do with it what I want. But that's not true. Okay, that's one possibility. What else could be a possibility?
It sort of expresses an ownership of some sort.
Right.
If he lends it to the
that's
other guy,
this great
it's
book
not his
coming over.
Right. Maybe the other guy's going to want to bring it home. That would be good.
The other guy's going to assume it's yours,
or left something that happened
or
to
damage,
him while he's
or
learning
damage
from it.
It.
Maybe
or
the possibility of something happening to it.
the more people you involve in the process, the greater the chance is that something's going to happen to it. What does Rashi say? V'lo yikari acher imo. Rashi asks implicitly, what's the word imo? First of all, interesting to note, it sounds from the Mishnah that somebody else could take it as long as you're not reading it together. That's what it sounds like. Imo. You shouldn't read it with him. But you could read it. Somebody else could read it, just not with him. What does Rashi say? Lefi sheze moshech etzlo, v'ze moshech etzlo, v'nikra. What does v'nikra mean? They're going to tear it up. Yes, we're talking. That's exactly what he's talking about. This is unfortunately not a talus. This is a sefer. You can rip the sefer. This person holding it from here. This person holding it from there, and then they can actually cause a damage. And it would seem to me that Rashi's giving just an example of something that can happen, not the specific thing that would happen, but something you have to watch out for. As we said before, the more people that are involved in it, the more. More risk there is involved in keeping it and maintaining it.
Well, it's not to say that he can't say, look what somebody lost or look what they found.
Yeah.
Or that he can put up a note and say,
Right, for sure. You can definitely bring attention to it.
Yeah.
The right here it's saying, don't use it with somebody else. Mm. Right? You can keep it on your shelf, show it to people, but don't open it up and read it with somebody else. Both of you looking over the page, both of you holding on to one of the Atzei Chaim or whatever they have, holding it together, that would be problematic. So that's in terms of a book. So what are some of the rules that we gleaned from the book, from the case of the book?
You have to maintain it.
You have a responsibility towards the book. And for whatever reason, if the book is of no use to you, you still have to do something with it.
Yeah.
So much so that you... Even though we allow you to use it and we mandate you to use it, you can't overuse it. Right? So there is a responsibility to do something with it, but not too much with it. Right? So there's clearly a balance here that you have to maintain. You can use it, you have to use it, but you can't overuse it. Okay, so that's what
some of you can extrapolate from a book to other things because, again, it's so rare and valuable. Maybe it's just talking about if you found the valuable object.
Right.
And not if you just found, something trivial.
Right. But because of the, I don't want to say primitive, but the primitive nature of society back then, there were a lot of things that are commonplace today that were very valuable back then, not just books. Everything was more valuable than it is today. A bookshelf will be more valuable. Clothing would be more valuable. You know, anything would be more valuable. Food was more valuable. I'm not talking about it money-wise. I'm talking in terms of...
A book seems like it's...
Yeah, a book would take a long time.
Very labor-intensive.
So would clothes.
Right? Clothing, boots, whatever it is. So everything would be more labor-intensive. Everything was done by hand. Everything had to be stitched by hand. Everything had to... You know, there were no machines. There's literally... There are some mechanisms, but there are no real machines. Okay. So let's look at the next case. So what we're going to find here is probably the application of similar generic principles, but to different situations, right? So what we're going to be looking for here is a balance of using it to maintain it, but not overusing that could risk damaging it. So let's see what the situation is. Matzah ksus. Let's say you found clothing. Mena'ara echad l'shloshim yom. What does that mean?
Shake it out.
Like Nior. Isn't that the Nior. I don't know where I know that from. There's another situation of Nior. I don't remember. But Nior, you have to shake it out once every 30 days. Now, interestingly enough, it doesn't say wear it, right?
Well, that would be...
Maybe that would be too much. And when it came to this... Yeah, it would damage. It would degrade the value of it. Now that's different from the book. The book, the way it's used, is itself what you're allowed to do. But when it comes to clothing, the way it's used is too much. So the principle that we now know is it's not about using things as they're meant to be used. That is not what you're allowed to do. You're not allowed when it comes to Shabbos Yevida. You cannot apply the rule. You can use it as it's meant to be used. Rather, the rule is you can use it to the extent that it's safe to be used. In order, and sometimes you have to the extent, in order to maintain it. But the rule is not use it as it's meant to be used.
But if you say that everything in those days was precious and rare, so maybe it doesn't really apply to our things. Like maybe it's not the same as our books. Or
you're saying nowadays would be different rules.
Right, our books.
Yeah, that could
are completely
be.
Different.
But value is not like, just monetary.
What if you lose your plastic bag? Like no one cares about that.
Well, that's something else.
Maybe.
Right. So the one of the things in terms of trying to apply it,
yeah.
in terms of trying to apply it, one of the things we have to figure out is how does it apply in terms of value? Are there things that are categorically, this is how you deal with the scroll and you can't do anything and this, you always have to follow the rules of the Gemara? Or does the change of time also dictate a change in policy? That the rules which are based on value carry over to something which has the same value nowadays? In which case, maybe we would apply the rules of a book to something like, I don't know, a computer or an iPhone, right? Something of value to that extent. It's not obviously intrinsically as valuable, but in terms of monetary value. So that's a good point in terms of how do we apply it. Second thing, the way that we apply it is in terms, let's say it is categorically the same. Let's say that it is categorical, that a Sefer Torah nowadays is just as precious as a Sefer Torah back then. You'd have to read it, you'd have to roll it, whatever you have to do. So then the question becomes, well, the reading policy, do we have to do it once every 30 days just like back then? Or is the quality of our Sefer Torah better that it maintains itself better?
Like my mezuzahs?
Yeah, maybe. So then that's another question we have to deal with. Is the quality of the same category, does it carry over in term? Maybe it carries over in terms of the rules, but in terms of the application of the rules is a little different. So this is all things that we'd have to go through if we would want to look into the halachas nowadays. So here you have clothing. You have to shake it out once every 30 days. Why? Presumably for the same reason as Rashi told us before, which is to make sure they're not dusty. Why else would you shake something out? The shotcha letzarka. What does that mean? Anyone know? You lay it out. Right? Shoteach means to lay it out. Litzarka. What does it mean, litzarka? Close. Litzorech would be as needed. What's litzarka? With a mapik hay. There's a dot in the hay.
As it would be laid out?
Litzarka,
for its need,
meaning litzorech shela. Litzarka means litzorech shela. What is that? What's the implication of that word?
Dry, flat, and reshape. In other words, the garment itself is dictating this is how it has to.
Okay, that's one possibility. There are two ways to understand it. The implication of it, I think, could be in at least one of two ways. One could be litzarka, litzorech shela, meaning whatever it needs to maintain, to be maintained, that's what you have to do. So you have to flatten it out, you have to stretch it out, you have to lay it out for its sake. Alternatively, one could say litzarka means the only thing you're allowed to do with it is the thing that it needs, not the things that you need. For its needs, you can lay it out. But if you need a tablecloth one day, you're not allowed to use it as a tablecloth. Not litzorech shelcha, litzorech shela. Right? So litzarka could mean for what it needs in its way of maintenance. So let's look at what Rashi says. Shotcha litzarka, litzorech shela, lishlot ba avir, shelotichle velotechlena ash. That I'm not 100% sure what ash means.
Is it moth?
Does ash mean moth? Trying to think. I'm not sure.
Does the Mishnah think in this situation that you're ever going to find the owner, or they think you're having it forever?
Right now, you're having it until you find someone that can reclaim it.
Is there an expectation that you will, or there's an expectation that you won't?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure in this.
Does Google give something like that?
What do you mean? The translation?
Yeah.
I'm going to try.
because like today if you're walking down the street and you find like someone's sock on the sidewalk, you're never going to pick it up and they're never going to have any expectation
right.
that they're going to get it back.
It is a moth.
You only pick it up if you find something
nicely done.
Valuable.
Never right.
doubt Reina.
Yeah, doubt no, it, and that's that comes to the application question. Right, back then, cloth is very valuable.
You would only pick something up if either you wanted it yourself or mm-hmm. if you feel like there's an expectation that you could actually find the person.
Interesting.
I'm thinking about on Shabbos how often I see hanging off of branches on shrubs.
Right.
Socks.
Glove.
Scarf.
Right.
Yeah. Yarmulke.
There are tons of things that are all around us. The question is, do we have, and that comes to the questions that we were saying before, what's the responsibility? To what extent are we responsible when we see something to actually pick it up and do something with it? Right, it might depend what it is, depends how valuable it is. It depends, maybe it depends on the probability of finding its owner. So all these things would come into play in terms of figuring it out.
A book that's going to get damaged in the elements, then you would take it up, pick it up and look after it for someone else. But a sock or a, you know,
right.
better to leave it where it was.
Maybe.
Or just put it in the washing machine so it'll find its mate.
Is that how I have all those socks in my house? And then if you look at the next words, avalo lichvodo, right? So we could have just read the next three words. You're not allowed to take it for your own honor, for your own respect. This is a nice robe. I'm going to use it, I don't know, for myself. All right, we got to wrap it up. I have a board meeting to get to, but... Klei chesef uchlei nechoshes mishtamesh bahen letzarkan. When it comes to metal objects, which one would presume have a little bit more sturdiness, a little right durability, so maybe we'd be more lenient in terms of its use. So mishtamesh bahen letzarkan, for their use. Aval lo leshachakan. What does that mean, leshachakan? Rashi says.
Depleted in some way, or
yes, yeah, sort of way to wear it down. If you look at Rashi says litzarkan shemit apshim, same thing bekarka, that gets all dirty in on the ground. Shetzarach le, what is that word? Letitain bekarka. I'm not sure.
Right, they would go crazy if they would see a sock on a bush, and we're just like, oh, there's a sock on a bush. Why?
I don't know. Bekarka shetzarach letitain. No, I'm not sure what this word means. Letatan bekarka bekedamrina lekaman shezuhi shmirasun lefikach mishtamish behan leprakim. You have to put it on the ground. Somehow these objects need to be on the ground. I'm not sure why.
To rub them, to polish.
No, it's definitely a tough and a tough.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's how I see it here. You have to put it on the ground. That's where you put it. I don't know. The Gemara says, apparently the Gemara talks about it a little later.
Do you want you to put it on the ground where you found it so the person can come back and find it?
No, it doesn't say that. But you have to keep it on the ground somehow. For some reason, we'll have to get to it. And maybe we'll get to it in the Gemara, though I want to focus on a different Gemara. But maybe we'll get that. I don't know. And the point is, because it's on the ground, because it has to be on the ground, Shezu Hishmirasan, that's how you guard it. To put it on the ground. You have to, once in a while, you have to use it. But it doesn't give a measurement, it doesn't give a time like it does by the books. Rashi says, Lo yishtamish behem zman aruch, sheyishachakan. You can't use it for such a long time, because then eventually it's going to wear out. You can use it normally, once in a while, but you can't actually use it so much that it's going to wear out.
I should use it because I think that these items are so precious that it's like a chaval for them to be unused.
If you don't have a chumash in your house
and suddenly you get this chumash.
I mean, something can dry out.
It's crazy for you never to be able to use
metal now.
Yeah.
You tend to, it can dry out if you don't use them. I mean, like us.
Or they'll rust.
If you don't oil it. But if you don't use it,
you use it lightly. You don't use it. Oh, you don't overuse it. What would you say about clay zav or clay zechuchis? What would you say about gold and glass?
Those don't
really decay, right?
No.
So in which case, says the Gemara, says the Mishnah, Lo yiga bahen at sheyavo Eliyahu. You got to wait a long time to start using those.
Because they'll break.
You don't touch those.
Right.
The gold is not going to decay in any way, and the glass
can break.
Gold. That's what Rashi says. Right, gold could dent. It's more. It's more flexible. Rashi says, "Lo yiga behen zav eno mitapesh." The gold is not going to get dusty or rot or whatever. Ba'aretz uzuchuchis shema yishaber, and the glass maybe it's going to get broken. Matza sak o kupa. Let's say you found a bag or a box. And anything that is not your normal thing to pick up, we'll have to figure out what that means. Then this person shouldn't pick it up.
Like the sack on the bush?
Sort of. We have to figure it out. What does it mean that it's not the way to pick it up? It's not your way. Rashi talks about it, but you can look at it for homework. But we'll pick it up next week as in terms of what that means. And then we'll look into that Gemara. We'll look into that Gemara. And trying to figure out why that would be that you're not supposed to pick it up. Okay? Shkach, you can keep the sheets, you can give them back to me. I'll bring them back next week. I'll keep them in my office, whatever you want.
Thank you.